There's a lot on the line in a divorce. Your home, savings, maybe even your kids. So when you find yourself facing divorce and the unexpected directions it can take, you need a partner you can count on. I'm Rick Julius, a partner at Cordell & Cordell. Don't let divorce take more than it has to.
Schedule an appointment with one of our Missouri or Illinois attorneys. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements. 600 Kelwood Parkway, Suite 310, Town & Country, Missouri, 63017. Joseph Cordell, licensed in Missouri and Illinois only. CordellCordell.com.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Spectres! Welcome back. This is the Mass Effect Lorecast, and I'm Tom. This is Sam. We're here talking about guess who? You want to take guess? Everyone want to take a swing at this one?
Does it rhyme with Miara?
Yes, it does rhyme with Miara.
I was desperately trying to find a word.
Clara? Is there a word that, other than just the ra part, rhymes with Liara, like it has all of that in it somewhere, maybe except for the L. Yara. I don't know. Anyway, that is a weird way to start an episode. But hey, we're talking about Liara. We're finally getting to Mass Effect 3. I think this might be the last one, Sam. Like, we're wrapping this up, right?
Yeah, for now, you know, for now, we have now officially spent 4 months on and off talking about Liara and Liara-related topics. So,
you Liara know, Lorecast. That's
it's
what
been a
been.
Third of a year, and I don't want to hear a darn thing from Liara Mancers that we didn't do enough Liara, or we missed so-and-so, blah, blah. Anyway, hash it out with the other disgruntled listeners who we didn't spend enough time on their favorite character. But,
yes,
you know, some of this has been because Liara just has that much involvement in the lore. But I've also been trying to break it up so it's not Liara every week, like just straight Liara every week. That would get a little much.
Yeah.
And so we found topics like Mars and Thessia that are Liara adjacent, but not Liara specific. So today is going to be our last Liara specific episode for a little while, at least. And we're talking about Liara in Mass Effect 3.
Yeah. So, okay. So where we left off, Liara, remember she was talking with the elusive man and she threatened him. She said if he was going to come after her again, he'd have to bring an army. Remember that? That's like foreshadowing. Now, like, if we're playing through this, like, in order, we wouldn't know in Mass Effect 2 what's going to happen in Mass Effect 3. But now that we can look backwards on it, we're like, whoa, wait, that's foreshadowing, right?
Oh, it's totally foreshadowing. It's totally foreshadowing, especially because I think that comic came out, like, with or just before Mass Effect 3 did.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, yeah. So, like, in order, we wouldn't have known if you had, like, read the comic at the time. But, like, looking back on it, yeah.
So, yeah, that's exactly what happens with Cerberus on Mars. That's where we find Liara at the beginning. She's being chased by these Cerberus troops. They're crawling through the vents. And it's at the Mars Archives, the one we already talked about. So she gets out. She blasts them with a biotic singularity. They're getting sucked into this singularity. And then she shoots them. And while they're on the ground, she delivers this cold execution shot right in their head. Well, I would imagine it's in their head. It's kind of from their body's perspective. So you're looking kind of up mm-hmm. at Liara as she's shooting down. And she has no expression on her face. And she notably also doesn't ask these Cerberus troops, like, why are you here? What are you looking for? Who do you work for? Any kind of questions at all. She just shoots them. So she's really continued to grow into a cold-hearted operative or a badass, depending on how you see things.
I guess it depends on what side of the aisle you're on. What side of her gun you're on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you're a friend of hers or if you're not a friend of hers. But she's not taking any hostages, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have a clip from when we first meet Liara on Mars in Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, this one
we can like.
Yeah, this one's pretty long. So yeah, if you notice something you want me to pause it, let me know. We'll kind of take this in parts. So here we go.
Easy there, Lieutenant. She's with us.
Shepard, thank the goddess you're alive.
You too, Liara.
I was so worried when the reports came in. I'm sorry about Earth.
Yeah. It was hard to leave like that.
Caden, I'm sorry. But why'd you come here?
Hackett ordered us to come. Said you'd know what was going on.
I do.
Hallelujah. Some answers, finally.
Maybe. I've discovered plans for a Prothean device. One that could wipe out the Reapers.
Here on Mars?
In the Prothean archives, yes.
So let's stop that for a second.
Yeah.
Just pause it for a second, because I want to provide some background for people who didn't listen to the Mass Effect Homeworlds comic episode that we did on Liara or haven't read that comic. You mentioned, or they mentioned real quickly that, you know, Hackett said that you would be here. So, about Liara. Mm-hmm. Hackett would know that because, as we knew from the comic, Hackett was working with Liara on finding some kind of Deus Ex Machina kind of way to defeat the Reapers, and Liara was hellbent on it being a Prothean kind of answer, Prothean device. And then you remember that took her to the water world and Kaje.
Yeah.
That's where they found the leads to Mars.
Right, so. Right. And that has always been kind of her focus, was Protheans and Prothean technology and things like that. So it makes sense that she might dive more into that than other people in the series, because that's kind of her specialty, right?
Right, yeah. I'm just bringing this up because I think without knowing that context in the comic that, hey, while Shepard was incarcerated, Liara was working with Hackett. Without knowing that specific little detail, mm-hmm. it would look like a hand-wavy justification. Like, wait a second, why does Hackett know where Liara is and she just so happens to be on Mars? Like, no, there was, you know, well-charted plot points from the end of Mass Effect 2 to the beginning of Mass Effect 3. At least for Liara's whereabouts.
Right. All right, so let's continue the video here. We got a little bit more on this.
We've known about the archives for decades. Why now?
Process of elimination, mixed with a little desperation. When you destroyed the Alpha Relay, you bought us some time. But then you were under investigation. I knew I had to do something. Hackett knew it too. He contacted me, asking if I would use my resources as a shadow broker to find a way to stop the Reapers. My search led me here. Hackett got me access to the archives and kept me updated on your status.
So there's a lot of Hackett mentioned in this clip. Like,
That's a bunch of Hackett.
That's a bunch of Hackett.
Yeah.
I didn't
Hackett much
since I stood around in a circle with my friends after we ate lunch in high school. Hacky sacks.
Maybe Liara's got a thing for Hackett. New fan theory.
Ooh. All right.
Liara is older than Hackett, though does not look like it.
Racial differences. But it seems like they keep on referring to this, which connects to the stuff you talked about, but shows that like they have been working together.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They have been clearly working together, putting one step, you know, it just makes sense why Hackett would understand that she's the shadow broker as well. Like, I don't recall whether or not it's actually specified, like spelled out that, hey, I told Hackett I'm the shadow broker.
Right.
Right. You know, but Hackett is privy to the highest levels of intelligence of the Alliance. And given that Liara has worked with Shepard before, and yeah, she is the shadow broker, but mm-hmm. I feel like she working so closely with him on the Crucible project, he knows. Like that, I feel like that's just a given that he knows.
Right.
Even if it's not specified. So,
yeah.
But yeah, this is also another instance of Liara having very plot heavy dialogue.
Right. Like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Vehicle for the plot.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that in previous episodes. So if you haven't seen the other Liara episodes, go back. That is a callback. I mean, that seems pretty, I mean, she is such an integral character. It makes sense that that would fall on her whenever the writers would need to fill in gaps in our knowledge because we weren't there or something like that. So, and she's somebody who knows a lot. So she has to tell us the information that we don't know that she knows.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. And this is why she gets accused of being a writer's pet, because she kind of is a writer's pet. She's a very, very convenient vehicle for the lore or the plot to get conveyed to the player. But again, you know, I like the way that they've woven in here that Liara appears to be one step ahead of the game than Shepard does, you know, because
yeah.
This is Shep and crew are playing catch up. Like, she's already on the lead for the Prothean device called the Crucible. And Shepard's late to the party here. Again, yeah, it is a convenient plot delivery method with Liara being yet again the person to do this, but Liara is the shadow broker, so it makes sense why she would know more than Shep does about these things.
I remember diving into Mass Effect 3 for the first time and noticing that that dynamic was different. And feeling very different about Liara because of that. Like, it's definitely switched. Or it's been switching, and it is fully now the other way around. It is
fully reversed now,
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
You compare it to when we first met her in Mass Effect 1, and she's like, is anybody out there? Can someone please help me?
Right.
I'm stuck in a biotic bubble. And, yeah, and Shep's like, okay, well, I guess I can help you. There's a slight damsel in distress kind of vibe to it.
Right.
But now it's like, Shep is like, you know, caveman discovering fire.
Right.
And Liara has known about fire for like a month or two.
Right. She's total girl boss at this point, right?
Like, yes.
To use internet parlance. all right, we've got another minute to go on this clip. Let's check out the rest.
I meant to come see you. But
I would have liked that. But under the circumstances, I think I can forgive you.
You're too kind. In any case, my work paid off. The archives are full of data, an overwhelming amount. I think I found what we need.
I guess I'll believe it when I see it. Where do we find this weapon?
It's not a weapon, not yet. It's plans for a device, a blueprint.
It's more than we had a minute ago. How do we get it?
The archives are just across that tramway. Assuming Cerberus hasn't locked it down.
What are they after?
Yeah, they seem hell-bent on catching you.
They want what I'm here for. What we're all here for.
But why?
The Protheans came close to defeating the Reapers. They had plans to destroy them, but ran out of time.
And anything powerful enough to destroy the Reapers are...
just might be something Cerberus would be interested in.
That sounds obvious. But of course, we've seen this before.
Assuming that Cerberus and the Reapers are at odds with each other, you know, like, oh, well, I mean, not really. But OK, so the interesting thing here also to me is that she's essentially telling Shepard to keep up. Like, Liara is pretty driven here. And of course, what we talked about in the Homeworlds comic episode, this is the perfect next step. Chasing the Prothean lead that they found out about on Kanje.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all very still Prothean focused at this point, for sure. All right, so anything else about this clip, or do we want to move on to other things?
You know, like we said, this is a lot of plot. It's a lot of plot handed to you on a blue platter. That blue platter being Liara's mouth. She is giving you the plot. Open up your ear holes and you will receive said plot.
I've got this weird picture of Liara's mouth on somebody's ear. I'm sure there's fan art of that somewhere. All right. So what happened to the Shadow Broker's ship that we found in Mass Effect 2? Like, let's get back to the whole Shadow Broker thing, because we've got like pieces of that that we kind of learn more about throughout Mass Effect 3. What happens to the ship?
So the short answer is that it's gone. And the longer answer is that Cerberus is the reason behind it. They went after it, and Liara crammed a bunch of equipment in a shuttle with Farron, and then they just bounced. And that's what happened. And that's why Liara has escaped. And that's also why she takes a bunch of her old crap and throws it in Miranda's old office when she gets onto the Normandy after the Mars mission. So that all of those different screens in there and Miranda's old office and the glyph terminal and glyph itself. And yeah, all of that was from the Shadow Broker ship. And it was a, you know, kind of convenient writing excuse, off screen thing to happen that Cerberus just so happened to find the Shadow Broker ship. That sets up the stage for Liara to adventure with us. Mm-hmm.
It's also cool to have that room transformed into something new for the next game, and being able to see all of Liara's stuff in there. Like, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and nice not to have, you know, remnants of human supremacist organizations in there. No more supremacy organization supervisor office. That was pretty drab anyway. If we're being honest, Miranda's office was kind of boring.
That's true. All right, so we got another clip here. Check this out.
Looks like you brought more than just that drone from your ship.
A few things were necessary. I'd be a very silent Shadow Broker without data feeds.
So you have access to your resources?
What I can get. We'll need it to research this Prothean device. Until we understand precisely what it does, it's far too dangerous to use.
It'd be nice to know we're not kids playing around with a loaded gun.
Absolutely. The damage it could cause if it backfired is unthinkable. This will be difficult even for us. If something happens on a mission, if either one of us are hurt, I'll always remember that tour of the Normandy. But let's be honest, Shepard. It's been more than a half a year. Should we continue where we left off?
I'd like that more than anything, Liara.
Good. I was getting worried.
There were a lot of reasons I was happy to see you on Mars.
I'd like that list, but later. There's so much left to do. I'm working with Edie. Hopefully we can discover what the Protheans left for us. But I'm looking forward to talking about something other than business. Maybe later.
I don't know that I'd noticed this before, but how much of a face toucher Shepard is. He's all over her face when they're being like, they have that little intimate moment.
Touches a lot of faces. And Liara, I feel like on multiple occasions does this animation where she's like holding your hands, or like putting her hands on your forearms. Uh-huh. And then she'll like slowly and seductively pull them away, where she's kind of like that on your arm. Little jazz fingers dragging them on your forearms.
Yes.
Yeah. And that happens, by the way, in some scenes where, even if you're not romancing her, but clearly that scene, you know, that's if you choose to continue a romance with her, that's taking place on one of the first conversations you have with her after Mars. You talk to her on the Normandy, and but I like the fact that, you know, you have a choice here. It can stay professional, or you can choose to romance her. And I appreciate the writers giving the clear option here to continue or not.
Yeah, with some of the romances, there's a lot of this ambiguous stuff that goes on. Like, if I do this, is it going to further the romance or not? Are they going to like it? Are they not going to like it? What's their personality like? But this is a very clear, like, hey, player, do you want to continue this romance? Yes or no? Click, you know?
And it works with Liara's personality, too, because she's, like, down to brass tacks now.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't, she's very assertive and confident. She's not going to beat around the bush like she did with, if you were trying to romance her and Ashley in Mass Effect 1. No, now she's like, look, do you want to continue this or not?
Right. And I feel like people can relate to that. I mean, I know I've had relationships where after a while, it was just like, are we going to keep doing this or no? Are we both in this still? And, you know, and sometimes the answer is no. Like, hey, we're cool with each other. We have a lot of respect for each other. You know, we're still close, but eh, maybe it's time to move on. And that's okay, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it also goes to show that, like, this is the way that Liara approaches this isn't just a convenient player, you know, focused choice. It's also showing that she's older and more mature now.
Yeah.
That she's not afraid to just address this like head on without being awkward about it.
Right.
Just being like very matter of fact. Where do we stand?
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is, I mean, just side note, this, I think this is the kind of thing everybody should learn to do if you plan on being in relationships, is just being able to talk about the relationship.
Boom. Crazy.
Crazy.
Crazy
emotional
talk.
Maturity. Imagine that. But that is really cool. That is like, you're right. This is more of her development. This is us seeing her continue her character arc in a few different ways.
It is. Yeah, it is. And she's very confident. You know, the blocking during this conversation, there's this whole room covered in monitors, right? And Shepard is trying to talk to Liara, but I don't know about you, but the way that Shepard is standing, the way that Liara is kind of focusing on work while she's talking to Shepard, it makes it look like Shepard is intruding. Like Shepard, like she is more independent now. She's focused on her work. Shepard and their romance is kind of a side thing.
Yeah. They both acknowledge that there are other things going on that are more important. If you include the previous clip as well, like, well, I can forgive you for that kind of thing that he says. But yeah, it's like the power dynamic is completely shifted at this point. So it's cool. It's a cool advancement of the character in some subtle and some very obvious ways, both at the same time.
Oh, yeah. And the way that, like, I had this epiphany about Liara's office on the Normandy. She's so focused on that work during this conversation. And pretty much any time you go down there to talk to her, she's so focused on the work because all of it is directly benefiting the Crucible. All of it. You know, it's probably one of Shepard's greatest assets and one of the only reasons that he or she is able to turn the tide of the war the way that they can. Because you have the Shadow Broker on your ship with you, and think about it this way. All of those war assets you pick up here and there throughout the game, they're all meant to benefit the Crucible. Acquiring them, sorting through them, assigning them, and then deploying them where they need to be. All of that could not be done without some of the Shadow Broker's assistance on board the Normandy, which is the only vessel that's finding all of them in the Milky Way.
Right. Yeah, it kind of brings it all together in one spot. Yeah, cool. All right. Well, we've definitely got more stuff to talk about with Liara, but we've got a planet card coming up in the mid-break. We got to go thank our patrons, so don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, we've got some new patrons to welcome. Pisces Nevermore and Sandwich 14. The 14th of the sandwiches. I had a sandwich for lunch earlier. I'm not sure which number of sandwiches that's in my life, but this one is 14. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the Patreon. I hope you're enjoying everything that you can get over at patreon.com/MassEffectLorecast. And we also have to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Edboy, Kirasi, Lieutenant Tosino, and William. Thank you so much for your support. And to all 69, nice, of our current active patrons, thank you so much. Nice. Thank you for your support. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You don't have to listen on Apple Podcasts. You just need an Apple account. And if you log in there, you can leave us a review. We would really appreciate that. And we'll read it out on the next show. You can also rate the show on Spotify. You can share it with your friends, all of that stuff. But before we get back to the show, well, I guess this is still part of the show. We have a planet card It's another
Planet card.
Yeah, it's planet card time.
Yeah, we need. I still need to like think of a sound effect for triggering the planet card. You know, maybe a mass relay sound effect.
Ooh,
I don't know.
Ooh,
yeah, because we're going to the planet, right?
Oh, yeah,
yeah. But anyway, here's planet card Helym. H E L Y M E. Hopefully, I'm saying that right. I don't know. But it's Helym is a post-garden world that once enjoyed an Earth-like oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere. Once. Not anymore.
Yeah.
It's still blessed with plentiful water, but generally a cold climate and extreme seasonal shifts courtesy of a 38-degree axial tilt.
So this is now, this is interesting. Like, have you looked into this? Like, what is the Earth's axial
tilt? I was curious about what the Earth's is.
Yes,
do you know what it is?
Yeah, because when I was prepping for the show, I noticed that and I was like, I need to chime in with Earth's axial tilt. It actually varies. On average, it's 23.5, but it goes down to like 21 point something and then up to like 24 point something. But on average, because it wobbles, like this is like a top. Think of a top spinning, the tilt of the top wobbles as it moves around. So that means that the axial tilt on this planet is a good 50% more than Earth. And even just those few percent changes over different years is enough to create more and less extreme seasons and things like El Nino weather patterns and like all the other things that go on with Earth's weather. So if just a few degrees can make a hot summer really hot or a colder winter even colder at 38 degrees, they must have very, very extreme differences in temperature and weather patterns. So,
oh yeah,
that's like,
totally not that's my habitable.
Yeah, armchair scientist's perspective on this, but because I'm not a scientist. But there you go. So yeah, 38 degrees axial tilt is a lot.
There is more though for Helym. Helym says that it's also thought to be the homeworld of the Arthen, a spacefaring species which disappeared approximately 300,000 years ago. That's six cycles, six Reaper cycles.
Yeah,
ago. Yeah. Precisely what happened to Helym is still under debate. It appears a global extinction event occurred, wiping out all native animal life forms more complex than zooplankton. Plant forms were not affected, but the lack of oxygen-breathing life caused oxygenation of the atmosphere. Plant life was reduced after lightning storms ignited global wildfires.
Oh, that's amazing. So much oxygen in the air means that fires rage out of control. That totally tracks. That's so cool. And terrible.
That's terrifying. Too,
right. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
The leading theory for Helym's devastation is an out of control biological weapon. For this reason, landing is strictly prohibited. The corporations of Helym have emplaced a network of quarantine satellites to dissuade would-be looters from landing in the crumbling cities.
Like a big sign plastered on a door of like, do not enter.
But it sounds satellites. Terrifying. It sounds like a Chernobyl kind of place in the Milky Way in the Mass Effect universe. I want to land there, first of all. I want to go and find out what's there, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, they are thin. So that's one of the only times, I think, if not the only time that we hear about the Arthen. Fun fact, widespread wildfires it mentioned, those are also mentioned on Ilos too. So if you remember that Ilos episode we did.
Yeah.
And another fun fact, apparently Artheni technology is estimated to be just as advanced as the current cutting edge tech in the Milky Way.
Interesting. Interesting.
Hence why they were harvested then.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet there's just a string of these old destroyed planets all over the place. That's crazy. Yeah, that's so cool. All right, well, that's our planet card for this week. If you have any thoughts or comments on that, let us know. Chime in on the Discord, let us know, because that would be a very interesting place to explore and extremely dangerous. So let's move on with the rest of the episode. We've got more Liara to talk about.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
So with Liara being so focused on the Protheans, we have such a really cool dynamic with Mass Effect 3 and the introduction of Javik. And let's talk about them, because that's kind of a big deal. Like, so what exactly does Liara do when we recruit Javik?
So she fangirls hard, pretty hard, for a little bit, and she has to restrain herself from asking too many questions.
Yeah.
But that excitement is killed pretty fast, because Javik is blunt. He's not a scientist. He's not a philosopher or a thinker or a politician or a historian. He is not one for the humanities. He is a soldier. He's a general, and he was, you know, trained to kill. And he is the avatar of vengeance. So he's not, like, you know, the proselytizer of Prothean culture,
I would imagine. And the other thing that always struck me about Javik is he is clearly the, like, imagine you were in his shoes. Everybody knows destroyed. You wake up thousands of years later and the whole, everything is different. And you're around a bunch of alien races that if any, if you recognize any of them, you kind of look down on them because they were nothing. They're like, there's like, that's got to do a psychological thing. I mean, we'll clearly talk more about him on his own episode, but yeah, it makes sense that he's a little kind of cold and just matter of fact because he's dealing with a lot.
I'd be depressed, especially because when he went to sleep, he had some shrivel of hope that maybe other Protheans would have been in their pods too, if not a lot of them, but some of them,
yeah,
you know, at least some. And then he wakes up and it's like, nope, you're the only one. And there's no hope for your species at all.
Right, right. Like, anybody would be depressed by that. That's terrifying. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's not in a good place. And Liara is like the excited kid on a field trip talking to the burnt out museum curator.
Right, right.
and the burnt out museum curator is like, look, I just don't give a shit anymore. But her excitement is killed pretty fast, you know. And she also thought Protheans were this peaceful, ultra advanced, utopic race where, you know, everything was just super great. And then they were just wiped out at the apex of their awesomeness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, we find that that's not true. You know, then Javik is standing in front of her like, ha, well, we used to eat Solarians and we meddled in your species evolution. Also, fuck robots, like eating.
Right.
She's awful.
Right, right. Like, everyone around me is insects. Like, what? Or robots, and I hate that too. Yeah, like, yeah. 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 So, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, he's basically like a Prothean supremacist. And he also admits that, like, his civilization was not above conquering other civilizations and then assimilating them into the Prothean Empire. And if they, like, weren't on board with that, they were just taken care of. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But eventually everyone came to calling themselves Protheans. So I think when Liara learns that, it dawns on her that, like, I've been crediting the Protheans with the achievements of far more races than were actually Prothean.
Right, right. I mean, we always refer to ancient cultures and things like that, but it's kind of like the Romans. The Romans took over other cultures and then brought them into their own culture. So although you could say the Romans invented modern roads or aqueducts or whatever, was that really a Roman invention, or was that something that they just kind of brought into their empire because they just consolidated more and more peoples around them and everything that they knew was now Roman?
Sure. Yeah. Like some of the Gauls, they were assimilated into the Roman Empire, right?
Yeah.
It'd be like taking some of their inventions or cultural traditions and crediting the Romans with them. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, it's huge all the way up to, you know, the UK, all the way through the Middle East and northern parts of Africa. Like, think about all of those distinct cultures and all the things that they developed is now just like hodgepodged as Roman. And it's like, well, it wasn't developed or designed in Italy. So was it Roman or was it acquired by the Romans? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of similar.
So she's disappointed. You know, she's like, never meet your heroes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you remember how we talked about Thessia, like Liara learning about her species, entire mythology was basically a lie.
Yeah.
And it was built upon the intervention of the Protheans. Well, even with Liara being this intellectual who knows far more than the average person in the Milky Way does, she's not immune from the pride that comes with any kind of sentient being's life. And she's not going to readily accept her entire species history as a lie, you know?
Yeah.
So this really blasts off after Thessia. We talked about Thessia before in that episode, but here's a clip that we have from what happens when you get back on the ship after Thessia, after Javik tells Liara, yeah, all of those things on Thessia, like your gods, they were all Protheans.
Those were all lies back there.
They were not.
My people weren't animals for your kind to experiment on.
You wanted to know more about your history, Asari. Now you do.
I have a name. It's Liara Tassoni, and I'd have...
Hey, settle down.
My home was just destroyed, and all he can do is gloat.
Given what's happened today, I think you owe Liara an apology, Javik.
Apologize for the truth?
For not doing more. You're a Prothean. You were supposed to have all the answers. How could you not stop this from happening?
We believed you would. Long ago, we saw the potential in your people. Even then, it was obvious. The wisdom, the patience. You were the best hope for this cycle. So you were guided when necessary.
But it didn't work.
You're still alive, aren't you? Your world may have fallen, but as long as even one Asari is left standing, the fight isn't over.
I guess that goes for Protheans, too.
Despair is the enemy's greatest weapon. Do not let them wield it. Liara Tassoni.
That was unexpected. Thank you.
We still need her talents. If grief overcomes her, she will be lost to us.
So did you actually mean what you said?
Does it matter?
Liara's been a good friend to me. It matters.
Then I will tell you what you want to hear. I meant what I said.
Carry on.
Carry on. Settle down!
Yeah, yeah. You know, Liara just running into a room and then starting a fight by shouting at people, that doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah.
So
it ties back into her character development. She's clearly much more passionate and feels more capable. But also in this situation, I would imagine is struggling with the disconnect. You know, like actually meeting a Prothean and Javik and his personality and how it comes across so cold and like, what are you doing? And then he's not treating her with respect because he doesn't use her name. And then that becomes a thing. And then he makes a very calculated decision here to start treating her more with respect and give her this like motivational speech and how her people were, that we were putting our hope in your people. That's why we helped you out. And that's probably true, but it also came about in this conversation is kind of manipulative to share it now. You know, like it's an interesting dynamic because you can look at this conversation and go, wow, that gives me goosebumps. I feel like, oh, there's a lot more going on that I didn't realize. And that wasn't good of them to put their hope in her people. But at the same time, it ends with that conversation where he's just like, well, I'll tell you what you want to hear. Yes, I meant it. And it kind of takes all the air out of the balloon. You know, it's just like, oh.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, Javik is smarter than all of us. Okay.
Right. But if he was that smart, then why wouldn't he have just lied? Why would he have let Shepard come to believe some, like, why not just, yes, I meant
to a certain degree, I feel like Javik is incapable of outright lying. And I almost feel like he is required to tell factual truths, like, mm-hmm. for example, the Asari gods being representations of his people.
Yeah, yeah.
So, or maybe it's a pride thing. Maybe it's like, hey, we did that.
Right.
You're giving credit to some weird false god. No, that was us.
Right, right. I like the complexity here. And we've talked about the complexity of these characters a lot, but like, even with Javik, and in this situation with Liara, like it's the complexity is interesting. It's palpable, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you can kind of read it a few different ways.
She is also in a very, very rough place because she just saw her home planet completely burned and decimated. And again, but even so, it is rare for her to, you know, break, to raise her voice, to threaten violence even.
Yeah. But I mean, if anything's going to do it, watching your own planet go through that feels like it's appropriate. Like, if you're going to lose it, that seems like a good reason to lose it.
Definitely. And not just lose your own planet, but then realize that most of your mythology and your history behind that was a lie.
Right.
And you've been given kind of an unfair advantage over the other species. That's why you've reigned supreme.
Right.
Yeah. It's a lot to deal with all in the course of what, like a couple days for her?
Well, literally and figuratively, her whole world is burning.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yes.
It's great, absolutely. Great way to put it.
Yeah.
So, I found it pretty telling. She kind of starts off that diatribe with, you're Prothean. You're supposed to have all the answers.
Right, right. Like, nobody has all the answers. If they did, they would have solved the problem, right? Like, that's
right.
Such an assumption.
Supposed to have all the answers. That's an assumption
right.
from her.
Right, that's...
That she's been operating under for decades.
Right, that reveals more about her and why she's so driven to investigate the Protheans than anything the Protheans ever claimed of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of pain in this statement, too, right? Because she's realizing that they're just as fallible as anyone else.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, she's looking for some kind of hero or god, I think, to kind of help in this, like, doomsday situation with the Reapers. Mm-hmm. And then the Protheans are not the gods she hoped them to be.
Yeah.
Ironically. You know, they're not the gods that her people worshipped them to be. So there's this resulting hopelessness. And, you know, yeah, like we talked about, did Javik mean it? Probably not. he calls Thessia's loss, quote unquote, insignificant compared to the loss of a galaxy.
Which, technically speaking, is true. If you were to count up all the worlds in the galaxy and compare it to the galaxy as a whole, it's a very, very small fraction of anything, right? So from a very literal perspective, that is true. But there's more weight there than just, you know, the math of it.
Right. He doesn't have a particularly high emotional intelligence.
Right.
Right. But also, I would argue that Thessia's loss isn't just one planet. It's a strategic, you know, decimation of the war effort.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
Losing Thessia, losing the galaxy's largest economy. And when asked specifically if he means it, you know, Shepard asks, did you mean that? He deflects and he said, well, she believes it. And it means she'll keep fighting. Isn't that what matters?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
So he avoids the question, and then he tells Shepard what he wants to hear, and says, I'll tell you what you want to hear. So, like, he could have done worse, but at least he did that much? You know?
You know, I guess I think it comes from like a this is as altruistic as Javik gets kind of thing. You know, like we should just take this as a win. So and the other interesting thing is we see here that that Javik is the only other person besides Shepard that is capable of inspiring Liara. I don't remember a single other person who does that with dialogue with Liara.
Yeah, that makes sense too, because I mean, she looks up to the Protheans so much that he would have the ability to do that even if he doesn't want it. You know, and like Javik is so interesting, too, from the perspective of he's the only Prothean that we really get to know. I mean, we see some other Protheans in those like flashback scenes and things. But to make the assumption that all Protheans are like Javik is probably not true. They might be.
It's probably a wild assumption.
Yeah. Right, right. Like if you just went met one human being and then you're like, all humans are like this one guy. Like, that's not true. Right. Like we are much more diverse than that. But that's not to say that he also doesn't have qualities that are common among his species. So there's always those questions there of like, is this just how Protheans are and he has no control over that because that's just what Protheans are like? Or is he just kind of a jerk? Is he just like among the list of Protheans who are just kind of jerks sometimes, you know?
Yeah. What if he was a jerk in his cycle too?
Right. I don't know.
And that actually makes it really hard for those of us who play D&D and those who want to emulate a Prothean character in your Mass Effect homebrew.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I guess I'm going to make him a little bit like Javik. Right. Doesn't have to be all like Javik, but I have to make this executive decision about what Protheans were widely like and what qualities he exemplified that may have been common. Yeah.
Yeah. One, yeah, a sample size of one is not really very good for much of anything.
No.
So, yeah.
No. But you know what? Liara looks up to him at this point. He really didn't give her a reason to, but you know, she still looks up to him. And that's why when he does that inspiring speech, she walks away a little bit more energized to keep fighting. And, I think that that interaction right there is so critical for Liara's development as a character, because at that point she could have just thrown in the towel and said, you know what? Screw it. I've been working like for 100 some years, and it turns out that all of it's a lie.
Yeah. Oh, and she's taken some extreme chances. She's like, thrown herself into a role that she never anticipated taking on. Like, she has gone through a lot at this point.
Yeah. Her very foundation is being rocked to the core. So I think it shows a remarkable amount of strength from her to continue the way that she does after that. And then, you know, ultimately, so we're going to skip around here a little bit. But ultimately, Liara is the person who brings up this idea of a beacon, not a Prothean beacon, but like a current Milky Way species beacon to leave behind in case they lose. Mm-hmm. So I think the very real possibility of loss is still in her mind. And she brings this to Shepard's attention. But why don't we watch this scene? Because this is truly one of Mass Effect 3's unique scenes with Liara that we got to address.
Come on in.
Thank you. Could we sit? I've been thinking about the knowledge we gathered on the Reapers and how easily it could be lost again. So, I put a plan in motion to preserve things for the future.
What's this?
A record of the galaxy. Information on the Reapers, relays, different cultures, and blueprints of the Crucible. But there's one entry I wanted your opinion on.
Which one?
Your own. I'd be honored to have your input. How would you like history to remember you?
You know me well enough to fill in the blanks, Liara.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I'd like it to be your call.
I'll start by saying Commander Shepard was born on Earth and fought harder than anyone else for his homeworld. Shepard could handle any weapon in the galaxy. The Alliance never saw a deadlier soldier. He was a soldier and a leader, one who made peace where he could. And it was a privilege to know him.
Careful, this doesn't sound like a diary.
I can't help myself. You're a good friend, Shepard.
You've been there for me too, Liara.
No, I haven't. I wish I could have joined you back on Ilium.
You made up for it.
Well, I suppose I did just write your name in the stars.
We talk about this a lot, the quality of the writing and the voice acting and the music. I think the music really pulls a lot in this scene. And to totally break the mood, can you imagine replacing that music with, like, I don't know, something wacky?
Like, just I was just thinking when she was like, he was a soldier. Like, he was a blah blah. All I was thinking was, he was a skater boy. She said,
in the background,
regulator boy.
In the background, you hear, skater boy, later boy. Yeah. Like, totally changed
or like,
the mood.
In the background, you hear the girl from Ipanema.
Right. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, exactly. Boom,
boom. Yeah. Like, yeah. But I mean, it's such a touching scene. I mean, I know I just killed it for everybody. Yeah. So you're welcome.
I think the name of that track is I Was So Lost Without You. I think that's what the name of that track is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Liara's romance theme, which is interesting because that's not a Liara romance specific scene.
Right. It's
this
also,
happens no matter what.
It's also not particularly romantic. It's emotional. It's touching. It's very open and connecting of the two characters, but it's also very solemn and kind of sad. Like, it doesn't feel romantic, you know?
No, it doesn't feel romantic, but I gotta say, if there was...
It feels intimate.
If there was a woman that I worked with who cared enough about me to make this for me, I would start to second guess whether or not this person had feelings for me.
Oh, true. Right. It feels intimate. It doesn't feel like candlelit dinner, you know, like going dancing, like, you know, looking at the stars on the beach. Like, it doesn't feel like that.
No, no.
It feels like I'm opening up my soul to you, which I guess is very romantic in its own way. But I would call it more intimate than anything else.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, it's a really cool scene, though, because it changes depending on your choices in the game. So it's really reflective of your Shepard. But even her entry changes depending on how you tell her to approach it, right? That's up to you. For me, I always tell her just the truth. Just put in the truth. No matter how boring or unflattering that might be, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The important part is if the goal of this beacon is to inform the next cycle the best we can to put them in a good position, then they need the full truth, not propaganda.
And we've just witnessed what Javik does with information that's not accurate about his people. He destroys it, right? Like, your perceptions of things are different. This is the reality, and everyone, especially Liara, has to adjust to that. And they go, oh, okay. So it doesn't help to inflate things or put things that aren't factual and useful for people to read about later on or witness or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it's always Liara that's doing this too is pretty interesting, in that no matter how many changes there can be to this scene, you know, how many different ways it can go, you know, what's being said, what's not being said, the fact is it's always Liara that's there with Shepard doing this. It's never any other squad mate. So it's a very intimate moment, like you said, that only Liara can share with Shepard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's even more evidence of her being like the second main character, which we talked about a lot. But yeah, it very much feels like that.
And, you know, Shepard says, well, you've always been there for me. And she goes, no, I haven't. So she actually does feel guilty. She carries a level of guilt with herself about not joining Shepard during Mass Effect 2's suicide mission.
Yeah.
She feels bad for that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, interesting point. I hadn't thought about that.
Despite the fact that she's literally the reason why Shepard is alive, right?
Right.
Like, she's the one who went and tracked down Shepard's remains. I mean, she has saved Shepard more times than he can count, and yet she feels guilty for not doing more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well put.
That's just the kind of person she is.
Yeah.
And this is just one of, like, I would call this a gift, right? This is kind of a gift that Liara's giving Shepard, the opportunity to have Shepard's input in what's going in this beacon.
Mm-hmm.
If not like a really bittersweet kind of like a let's watch the world end together kind of way.
Yeah, it has a little bit of that in it too, yeah.
Yeah, but then there's another final gift. This is the final goodbye that you can have with Liara in Mass Effect 3. When you're going up to basically trigger that final run in Mass Effect 3. And this scene, I feel like, can be interpreted multiple ways. It happens whether or not you are romancing Liara. Liara offers you a quote-unquote gift right at the end. And anyway, here's the clip of it. Let's play this. It's about 2 minutes long. We can, you know, kind of stop.
Feel free to...
Depending on where we want to talk about things.
Yeah, feel free to chime in and comment. Let me know.
Right around like a minute 30 is when it gets silent and we can start explaining the visuals for people who are listening.
All right, here you go.
How are the casualties?
They haven't brought in many more wounded.
That's something. How are you holding up, Liara?
This is it. isn't it?
Yeah. This is it.
I don't know what to say. I just know I'll have a clever line 5 minutes from now. I do have one thing for you, Shepard. A gift. It'll only take a moment, if you want it.
What kind of gift?
Do you remember when I first joined my consciousness to yours? I can show you some of my own memories. Asari exchange them sometimes, with their friends, or the people they respect. It can also be a way to say farewell.
I'd be honored.
Close your eyes.
And so they're doing this mind melt thing, right? That we have seen in so many other instances of, you know, Embrace Eternity, but they're standing, it looks like, in the void of space with these stars around. There's an event horizon in front of them, and they're embracing as they kind of watch this event horizon grow. And this light is growing, and you hear Vigil playing in the background, right? And then
Thank
the
you.
Event horizon encompasses them.
For everything.
It's kind of like a space trip. Like,
yeah.
Like if you took mushrooms.
Right. And this is, she mentions a memory, right? So what is this scene that she is showing Shepard? She mentions that she can share memories. That doesn't look like a memory.
No. No. It, yeah. Sorry, go on. Go ahead.
And it looks more like what you said, a trip. Like you're literally floating in the void of space. It's tranquil. Mm-hmm. It's peaceful. And you're watching as this light kind of envelops you.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you take psychedelics and people talk about how like they see lights or colors or it feels like they're moving and like these kinds of things. It feels kind of like that in a way, but... You're right. She said a memory, but at no point has she experienced floating in space and then all of a sudden an all-encompassing light coming over her, right? It feels like it must be symbolic.
Right. I kind of thought the first time I ever saw this that it looked like a visual representation of like the Big Bang maybe or something like that.
Maybe. Or light then, encompassing darkness.
Right.
Something like that.
And maybe it was just a visual representation of the likelihood of death that's approaching them.
Maybe.
And regardless, though, you know, it's a final moment of tranquility before the end of the game. And I found this Reddit thread discussing this exact scene. And I like this answer. It's a comment from Reddit user Commander Oshawott. Great name, by the way. So the comment says, "It's just that moment. A single moment in time, one that ends too soon and yet stretches on forever. A moment where there's nothing else, no war, no Reapers, no galaxy, no conflict, no pain, no suffering. In that single moment, it's just Shepard and Liara together."
That's nice.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful moment, right? You know, it's just the peace of mind that Shepard may need to go forward.
Yeah,
in the final moments of the game.
Right, and I think that is even punctuated by her just kind of leaning her head on his shoulder. This, like, it's you and me, we're here, and there's everything else out there, but at least we're here right now. Like, that kind of, I don't know. Yeah, it's almost meditative, even.
Yes, yeah, it is. And again, you know what? This happens even if you didn't romance her, right? This kind of gift scene happens. Mm-hmm. And yet I feel like there's really strong tension here yet again, because it kind of feels like Liara does have some feelings for Shepard, no matter whether he or she reciprocates them in any way.
Right.
Because it's intimate. And maybe that's just who Liara is, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that when she becomes good friends with someone, she likes to, like you said, share part of her soul.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just who Liara is.
Right. And at this point, she clearly trusts Shepard. There's probably very few people in her life who she can flat out say 100% trust you. And whether you're romantic with that kind of friendship or family member or whatever, there's definitely an intimacy there.
Yeah, yeah. So personally, I agree with Commander Ashwat here in that I think it is just supposed to be represent a single moment of peace before the storm, you know, the coming storm or the end of the game. But there's some other theories about this scene, and we should just get into one of them because it's really problematic, but it seems like a lot of people kind of subscribe to this or at least entertain the idea. So basically it's that this looks similar in nature to one of her Embrace Eternity scenes, which also features the same mind melding that appears to happen when Asari are reproducing. But it appears to be up to the Asari whether she's accepting her partner's DNA, whether or not the mind melding results in reproduction.
Right.
So the theory suggests that this is Liara reproducing with Shepard, even if he or she doesn't know it.
Right, right, without consent. But that's right. The part that makes it sticky, right?
Like, obviously messed up.
Yeah.
Ethically, morally, you might even ask why even entertain this theory at all? What's the point? Well, the popular answer is that so Liara can have Shepard's kid post Mass Effect 3, even with Shepard dead and gone. Right. Even if you didn't romance Liara. So then that way it would provide a single track narrative future for this. But like I said, this unconsensual reproduction, incredibly wrong on so many different levels that even though it wasn't violent per se, like, you know, but I figured we should address that since it looks like this is a big chunk of the fandom thinks this could be the case. Not the majority by far.
It would definitely be not the majority. It'd be the equivalent of breaking into like a sperm bank and just picking somebody's sperm intentionally. Somebody, you know, you read their name on the label, you pick up their sperm intentionally and have it and use it to have a kid without getting approval, with like very, it's, that would be the closest similarity, right? Like,
and also doing it because you know that person was going to die,
right? Yeah, there's other levels to it, but in both of those instances you're not asking for approval from the person, you're doing it without anybody's consent other than your own. And yeah, totally. It's kind of messed up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not. So again, like I said, I don't think a majority of people believe in that theory, but anyway, it's a large chunk of players who, you know, posit the theory, whether or not they believe in it. So that's, I guess, an alternative to what's going on in that scene. But like I said, I think it's just a tranquil moment of peace before Shepard rides off into the unknown, perhaps for good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, then I also love the part where Liara says, I just know I'll have a clever line 5 minutes from now.
Yeah. That's a good line. That's a good line. Yeah. Like I'm emotional right now and normally I'd have a clever line, but it'll come to me later.
Which is, you know, surprisingly real. And it's pretty meta because the writer didn't try to force something there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The writer might have literally just been talking directly to us.
Right. Well, it's almost like that was the clever line.
Right.
So, yeah. Boom.
Mind blown.
Antlers.
The writer didn't try to force something, you know, that like just like someone who was actually exhausted in that situation fighting on Earth, they don't have the mental energy to come up with a pun.
Right. Right. Or they're going, this game has to release in 3 weeks. Just got to write something. Get it down. Yeah.
Yeah. Or that. Yeah. So that kind of wraps up our episodes on Liara for now. But I just want to end with some conclusions that Liara is so much more mature by the end of Mass Effect 3 than when we met her in Mass Effect 1. And she was wiser, she's more confident, she's independent, but she still loves Shepard. No matter whether you romance her or not, that much is evident. You know, whether it's a romantic love or not, she loves Shepard. And she benefits from a lot more character development than the average squad mate did.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I like her character arc overall. I mean, nothing's perfect, and we've kind of gone over some of the funny bits as we've discussed Liara over the last few months. But overall, like, A. I give this character development, this character in a video game, a 92% A. I'm just going to put a number.
Wow, an A minus.
An
okay.
A, well, an A was like a 95%. Okay, there we go. Solid middle of the road A.
You know, I found it interesting that, like, in the beginning of Mass Effect 1, she was deciphering a beacon. She was helping us decipher the Prothean beacon's vision that Shepard got. Mm-hmm. And then by the end, near the end of Mass Effect 3, she's then making her own beacon.
Right.
Kind to of leave behind. It.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
and the fact that Vigil plays in the background of that gift, that, like, mind melding, Vigil, the song is playing in the background of that. Mm-hmm. Vigil is, of course, the music from the menu of Mass Effect 1.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Again, like a full circle kind of thing where it's kind of trying to get you to remember all of the memories you had playing through this trilogy.
Right.
It's invoking those memories with the older track. It's a callback, yeah. An auditory callback.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. You, in the pre-show, we were chatting and we brought up the Lord of the Rings. There's similarities in their relationship, non-romantic relationship between these two characters, you know, Shepard and Liara, as there is with Sam and Frodo. This idea yeah. of like mutual respect, 100% trust, going to the ends of the earth together, the way that bonds the two characters and the fact that they couldn't do it without each other. Like all of those aspects play into this almost like, you know, we've been through hell together. And so we're bonded, whether it's romantic or not, it doesn't matter. We've seen each other's souls. We've gone to the ends of the world or the ends of the galaxy in this sense. Yep. And here we are.
Man, I would have loved a moment from Liara where it looks like Shepard is getting corrupted, right? maybe by indoctrination. And Liara's like, you know, there's beautiful things in the world, Shepard. And they're worth fighting for.
And they're worth fighting for. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that would have been awesome.
That'd be awesome. But well, that's it. We're wrapping up Liara. We're
yeah.
done.
Yeah. Yeah. Her character arc is unlike any other. It is uniquely woven into the story of Mass Effect.
Yeah. Very and cool.
So.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, this has been a fun little adventure we've been on. I'm sure we're going to move on to some other stuff on some future episodes. But if you have any other thoughts about Liara and any of the stuff we've covered, please let us know. Comment on our Discord or wherever we are. Hey, jump in our live streams and that kind of stuff. And Sam, you've got live streams. Are you doing one today? Normally you stream on Saturdays, right?
I am, yeah, in about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I am streaming my personal canon playthrough of Mass Effect 3. It's very modded, very heavily modded. So I will warn people that way. But I am streaming that every week. I took a couple of weeks off, basically, to help move my fiance in. She's all moved in up here. I have a cat now who has remarkably been nice and not interrupting the podcast today. So that's nice. But yeah, I am going to be streaming on Saturdays and hopefully in the middle of the weeks too. My streaming schedule and this schedule for this podcast might have to change, though, in the near future because my work schedule is changing. I'm no longer on the early morning graveyard shift.
Yeah, wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my God. Yeah,
exactly. That means more evening shift or evening streams, evening podcast things for me. But because I'm on the West Coast, that'll be like even later for those of you on the East
Coast.
Yeah,
we'll probably do like we do with our Patreon episodes. Probably be about 9 p.m. Eastern. Right. So just after work for you, your evening for me. So, yeah, it'll work out. And maybe that means more people will be able to tune in because people will be home from work and stuff. So that should be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Yeah. All right. Well, I shared your link in the for the live stream friends. Thank you for being here, live stream friends. You guys can follow Sam over to his stream after this. And of course, you can tune in for my stuff. I've been streaming more games lately. I've been playing a lot of Fallout 76 and ESO, and I even started Lord of the Rings Online because I've been doing more content for my other shows. So you can check out my live streams, twitch.tv/robotsradio. And we'll be back next week with more Mass Effect. Who knows where we're going to go next? Do you want to tease anything or should we just leave it up in the air?
I actually haven't even decided.
So it's up in the air.
It is really up in the air. I'm thinking we are going to pivot and talk about one of the other OG Mass Effect characters, like Rex or someone that we haven't really discussed.
Yeah, so. Lighten it up a little bit with Rex and the terrible things that his race goes through. That'll be it. Oh, boy.
Good break. Yep.
Good break. All right. Well, thanks for being here, everybody. We'll see you next time. Stay safe out there in that crazy galaxy. Bye. Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
The holiday season should remind us that faith and family are the most important things in life. I'm Rick Julius, a partner at Cordell & Cordell. We hope that you succeed in coming together this holiday season with those you love, and in the process, create wonderful generational memories. Holidays have this magical power to magnify small things into ever greater memories over time. Happy holidays.
Schedule an appointment with one of Cordell & Cordell's Twin Cities attorneys online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.